Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics podcast, the voice for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Bridget.
And I'm Colleen.
And today we're really excited to have Janine Vanderberg on. Janine is the co-founder and senior strategist for Changing the Narrative. And Changing the Narrative is a really great group that was founded to help end ageism. So their motto is Changing the Narrative, Changing Ageism Together. And we've really learned a lot and talked a lot about how ageism plays such a big role in the workforce for just our whole nation, and how it really is a huge problem, and it's kind of veiled, thinly veiled, but not really. You know, it's kind of blatant at a lot of points. And Changing the Narrative is really addressing that and finding ways to help just kind of bridge this gap between employers, employees, and people who really want to work, you know, want to continue working. We also talk about a lot of people that have the need to continue working.
We created some innovative workshops, and I think that they want to focus on three different strategies that she talks about: education, intergenerational connections, and policy and law. And what I liked with Janine is that she was talking about concrete examples. So she, you know, we asked her about resumes, and she had a controversial response to resumes about maybe not putting the date that you graduated at college, or not putting the years that you've worked at a particular location. And even though that goes directly against the fight against ageism, some people need to get a job. And right, they need to get a job now in the world that we live in. So I thought that was really honest and effective. She also talks about different platforms that you can look at that have companies that work with the 50 plus age demographic. So if you like, AARP has a work list of companies that you can send your resume to. And that's what people need. People need to say, okay, I need to get a job. Indeed is not going to be talking to me in their job postings, which we also discuss. Where can I look? And she gives us starting points. She gives you concrete examples of what to put on your resume for interviews, for intergenerational mentorships. It was a really helpful conversation, I think, for many people that are looking to continue work, because some people absolutely have to work, but some people find such purpose and community in working that there are different reasons why the 50 plus age community is not looking to retire. And we're not. We are going stronger and living longer. Why should we retire? We talk about that as well. Guys, you can always check out Changing the Narrative's website for resources, AARP for resources. And let's get started with our conversation with Janine. We'll talk to you after.
Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics podcast. Today we have on Janine Vanderberg. Janine is the co-founder and senior strategist for Changing the Narrative. I'm so thrilled to have you with us today. So welcome to the podcast, Janine.
Bridget and Colleen, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I wanted to start with Changing the Narrative. You talk about on the website effective ways of communicating about aging and ageism, which is so important, but runs the gamut. That could apply to relationships, that could apply to business, that could apply to health. And for you, you kind of focus on the employment aspect. Am I correct?
So I personally do. And let me just step back maybe for a moment and talk a little bit about the broader umbrella of Changing the Narrative. So we started in 2018, and a lot of what we started with was initially just focused on changing communications, changing messages, reframing aging, right? And we quickly learned, being out there in the community and talking to women and men every day, that workplace age discrimination was a huge issue. And so we started basically a campaign to include, to encourage age-friendly workplaces, to encourage public policy that would strengthen age discrimination laws. And then we kept talking to people, and certainly during the pandemic, we discovered that healthcare and ageism in healthcare affecting a lot of women. And I think, you know, women of all ages have frequently experienced I'll just call them strange encounters in healthcare. And those actually get worse as we get older. So we talked about that. We touched somewhat on ageism and popular culture. And we did that through our anti-ageist birthday card campaign. So, you know, there are all those birthday cards out there that celebrate, quote, milestone birthdays. But instead of celebrating, whoa, Colleen or Bridget, you know, you had a milestone birthday, you started a podcast, we go, you know, oh, everything's downhill, it's decline for you, you got a year older. So we commissioned greeting card designers to design cards that celebrate ageism, or celebrate aging, not ageism, and instead of denigrating it. So the way we like to describe our work is a campaign to end ageism that uses, you know, evidence-based strategies. So things like education, intergenerational connection, strategic communications, and also policy and law, because we know, you know, data and research from the World Health Organization and others show that there are some effective strategies to end ageism. And there's a whole lot of stuff that we do that really, you know, it's kind of nice, it's kind of interesting, some of it is fun, but it's not necessarily effective. And we're all about, we literally want to end ageism. It's in our logo tagline, and we're serious about it.
For years and years, you always hear 65, 65, yep. That's the year. And right. That is changing,
right?
But sometimes in a positive way, sometimes not. What do you feel? Is the age increasing because of financial need or because yeah. of people wanting to remain employed? Or is it because they don't want to, you know, policy and things don't want to pay out the Social Security or the benefits at that age? What are your thoughts on that?
So those are all such great questions. And maybe I can share three stories. And this is literally three groups of women that maybe give a sense of the range. The year before the pandemic, I was doing in-person workshops. And at every single in-person workshop that I did, when I talked about workplace age discrimination, somebody would like kind of raise their hand and say, you know, that happened to me, happened to my partner, happened to my dad, happened to my mom, and that kind of thing. At one particular workshop, there were a group of women who were in their 60s, and it was a workshop followed, it was kind of a lunch and learn, so it was a workshop followed by lunch. And I noticed as people were leaving, they were literally taking some of the refreshments. They were kind of asking me, but putting them in tote bags. And so I sat down and I was like, what's going on? And they were like, you know, we're trying to live on really small amounts of Social Security. And what struck me was I was staying in a hotel in town and there were help wanted signs everywhere. So we talked about that. And they basically said, you know, we're not getting hired because of our age. Now, this was a group of women who were, you know, educated, who had had real jobs and that kind of thing. And what I realized, what happens to women when we dove deeper into the topic, so many of us have been paid less over a lifetime. We know that's starting to change, right? Because of pay equity laws, but it's still not there, right? So women have been paid less. As women, we are more likely to step out of the workplace, caregive for children, caregive for older family members, right? So all of that reduces things like Social Security, 401k, savings we have, the income we've accrued. So women, very often, we end up much more economically insecure as we get older. And then, of course, we live longer, right? So the likelihood of outliving a spouse, partner, whatever, so it really shrinks, right? The economic security. So part one, I think, through that story, and there's a lot of research that supports it, is a lot of women are working longer because we need to, right? It's not, so there's that. But there's also, so I'll go to a meeting that I was at two nights ago, and it's a group of women who are, and I want to use the word unretired, who are officially retired from their main job, but who are still very active in community doing things. And for that group of women, continuing to work in some way is really more, it's less about money, but it's more about, you know, meaning and purpose, right? Like, what's our reason for getting up in the morning? And we know from all the Blue Zone research that a way that we have of living not only longer, because nobody just wants to live longer in and of itself. We want to live longer and healthier and happier, right? So a way of doing that is making sure we've got that reason to get up in the morning. We have that meaning and purpose. So for that group of women, it's meaning and purpose. And we also know social connection, right? Very often for many of us, we have that sense of connection through our jobs, our work. And when we quote, retire, like, where does that go, right? And so, and people are faced with making new connections, making new friends, you know, which is somewhat harder as we get older. So I think that there are a lot of reasons why people are continuing to work. And then part of it is just the unpredictability. I mean, we don't know how long we're going to live, right? We may think, a friend of mine said, you know, she had a mom who lived until 90. And she said, and her mom thought she had all the money she would possibly need. But she outlived, you know, what her savings and everything else. So I think that there is a lot of reasons why we choose. And it's a combination of meaning, purpose, money, social connections. And like some of us, like, I love what I'm doing. So like, why would I stop doing it? Because somebody says, you know, this is the retirement age. It doesn't make sense.
We spoke with Dan Buettner, so we are aware of his nine steps. And it is really important for people to have a purpose, to get up, to connect, to have community. And as women get older, it's harder and harder to do that. We also talked to Susie Orman about the fact that we should try to work as long as possible to stay the Social Security. So if you can make it to 72, you're getting a lot more in that case than you would get if you took it at 62 or 65. So there are so many factors involved in that. But I think we just had this event last weekend, and a lot of women, I think, are concerned that they're being edged out by younger people in their careers. Yeah. What would you say to that?
So I could probably talk for 3 hours about this. What's the date of this podcast? Here's the thing, and those women, absolutely true. So about 2 weeks ago, I spoke at an event called Denver Startup Week, and there were over 100 women in the audience in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And the title of the talk was, how do you start a business after your 40s, right, and beyond? And so everybody there are interested in entrepreneurship. So the first question that we asked was, how many of you feel that you have experienced workplace age discrimination? Every hand in the room went up. So we have a group of women that we know feel like they have been pushed out, right, because of their age. And we know that when you compound ageism with sexism and racism, right, women, and especially women of color, are all on the bad end of that, right? So we know that it's real. Data from AARP and others show how prevalent it is. Over 3/4 of people between the ages of 40 and 65, according to AARP research, have experienced or witnessed age discrimination in their own workplace. And I hear the stories of women every day. So that's one piece of it. But the other thing that I find really interesting, Colleen, is that Harvard Business Review released an article, and it was a few months ago, and there were 3 researchers who did survey research of women leaders in 4 different industry sectors across the United States. And their conclusion, and I'm calling it the Goldilocks factor, is there's actually no right age to be a woman in the workforce. I called it the Goldilocks because, you know, Goldilocks, too hot, too cold, oh, we finally get to just right. But for women, it's we are too young, too old, and we are never just right. And so what this research found, when we are younger, women are discriminated against. And I've heard this from a number of younger women that not taken seriously, you know, ageism and sexism also confused with lookism, you know, if you look a certain way, or younger women coming in the room, not viewed with the authority they have and may be viewed as support staff still, which is stunning to me because, you know, over 3 decades ago, I started my own consulting firm because I realized how traditional work didn't fit also with being a mother, right? So it was like, okay, I'm starting my own company. And then all of us in the middle you're kind of not right, because there's this perception, well, you know, they're going to have kids, or they're going to take off to, you know, go to their kids' soccer games or that kind of thing, which, you know, I did. Or, you know, going to the title of your podcast, Hot Flashes, right? They're going to have to deal with menopause, and they don't want to deal with that. And then all of a sudden, magically, you know, you've got expiration date stamped on your forehead and you're perceived to be too old. So to me, and I wrote a blog about this, and I ended up getting also quoted in a Katie Couric Media article on this. What we know is there really never is the right age to be a woman. And so I think what's important for all of us women to do of any age is to just challenge that notion, and not, instead of relying on the sort of predominant narrative that pits younger women against older women, I think we need to come together and we need to become allies. And just, you know, I mean, to me, it's always been really important as I achieve things, you know, to extend that ladder and bring other people on. And I think all of us can do that at any age. And I think it's important for younger women to not look at older women as the enemy. I mean, we have 10 million unfilled jobs in the United States, right? We don't have a sufficient workforce. Employers can't fill their talent pipeline shortages. And we've got this storyline going on that older people need to get out of the way. Like, how ridiculous is that, right?
And we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. And we're back.
At our event this weekend, someone asked the question about the competition of women. Any suggestions there to try to bring that about so younger people realize we're not out to get your job. We want to lift you up.
You know, one of the things, and I talk to employers a lot about this, when I have the opportunity to talk to employers about how they can leverage the talent, experienced talent, right, to meet their business objectives. I never just, what I call my talk is not just the business case for older workers or older women. It's the business case for older workers and intergenerational teams. So what we know is when you bring generations together, you get the same benefits of diversity that other forms of diversity do. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work if we just say, okay, now we have older people here and we have younger people here. I mean, to leverage it, we've got to figure out what are issues that people can work on together, right? How do we bring intergenerational teams together to work, for example, on a particular company challenge or an idea that's being developed? And I think by doing that, we have the opportunities to learn from each other, right? To assist each other and to do reciprocal mentoring. So too often people think mentoring is just one way, right? And there's some fascinating research to me that occurred during the pandemic that shows younger people who were entering the workforce really felt like left alone. Like, what happened? Older people were being pushed out, right? That's what all the data shows, that when there were the pandemic layoffs, it was older people being pushed out. But then younger people are entering the workforce and like, okay, who do I ask? How did this work? Not only the industry, the community that you're in, all of those kind of insights, right? Customer insights. Think about designing products. And I think about this a lot. I was in a meeting the other day with a diversely aged group of women. Is that a phrase? I don't know. Anyway, there was this group of women, and this one woman was saying that she wasn't going to renew. I'm not going to name the company. I don't think they're based in Nashville, but I'm not going to name the company anyway. But she wasn't going to renew with a particular insurance company. And the insurance company is the one that says, oh, you don't want to become your parents, right? And so she thought that was a really ageist like ad campaign. And what was interesting was the younger women in the room didn't say, oh, I love that ad. And clearly that advertisement is being geared towards attracting younger people. What the younger women said was, I think that ad is really stupid too. By not having, you know, diverse age groups, and whoever came up with the thought, the ad or something like that, they're missing, you know, the benefit of age diversity and having people look at this and saying, I know you think that's going to, somebody thought that was going to appeal to younger people. they had the wrong people in the room. It offended older people, and it also, so I think we've got to bring intergenerational teams together. I think all of us of any age need to look for opportunities to support each other. And that has always been true of women in the workforce. When I started my company, realizing that as a woman in my 30s who had just had my first daughter and had my second 3 years later, that work, the way it was traditionally organized, was not going to work for, you know, being a mother of young children and wanting to spend any time with them at all. So I started my own company. And initially, we hired all women. At one point, the password for our company was 25 smart women, and was for the security on the building and everything else. But we did that. We hired women because we were able to attract such amazing talent, because women need, and this was like 30 years ago, women needed flexibility, right? We needed the ability not to come into the office every day, to not come in the office when the kids were sick, and most workplaces didn't allow that. So, and sadly to me, that is still the same state of affairs. So I think all of us just need to look around in our own, wherever we are, and say, how can we speak up, not just for ourselves, but for other women as well?
You know, mentoring goes both ways. I think women of our demographic think that we should be the mentors, when in actuality, the younger generation sometimes, especially with social media, can be the mentors for us. And in any way that you can hone your skills makes you more valuable in the workforce.
Yeah, Colleen, absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up. And I think, you know, very often, we look at, well, it's in social media, it's technology. But I think of all of the time, I love spending time with my own two millennial age daughters and their friends. And it's not just about kind of the things they can do that I may not be as familiar with, but just insights they have into the particular work they do because of what they're doing and that kind of thing. And so the ability to learn from each other, I think, doesn't go away at any point. And one of the questions I like to ask people when we're doing kind of facilitated groups is, you know, tell me about something that you've learned from someone younger or older than you. So it starts priming the conversation, right? Because we can all think of that thing, right? And then it's like, okay, so how can we expand that learning? There are so, so many opportunities to learn from each other, but we've got to do it deliberately, right? It doesn't just magically happen. Just having different ages on Zoom squares or, you know, in adjoining cubicles isn't going to do it. We've got to create the opportunities for people to actually learn to each other. One of the things I'm really interested in and promoting these days is intergenerational employee resource groups in companies. Because, you know, we often have employee resource groups that are targeted at a specific group, but we can't learn from each other, right? And leverage the benefits of diversity that way.
What I really liked when I was looking into changing the narrative was the resources that you use to educate companies, the toolkits and things that you use. Can you talk a little bit about different things that you do to help employers?
You bet. So one of the things that we know is there are, thankfully, a lot of people who talk about ageism, and that's a great thing. You know, for example, the American Society on Aging just ran a fabulous campaign that happened on October 7th, and it was Ageism Awareness Day. So we've got a lot of people putting resources and talking about ageism. But, you know, when I mean, you're in business, people need really concrete, like, what am I going to do on Monday morning? So what we do in our workshops for employers is, you know, we kind of lay out the issue. And I call the issue the puzzling paradox. We have 10 million unfilled jobs. We have older people who want to work who are being pushed out. What's wrong with this picture, right? We know that that is very often because of common and outdated myths and stereotypes. So we kind of, I call it just myth and stereotype busting. We kind of go through, you know, here are some of the myths about older workers. Here's what the research actually shows. And by the way, here are some really cool examples. So we try to get rid of myths and stereotypes because we know before people are going to take action, we've got to kind of address what is in people's heads. But then we give like really concrete suggestions. So not just do something, but so for example, I very often, after I do one of my workshops, will get a request from an employer who says, great, I want to try to find those older workers that you're talking about. And I said, well, okay, show me your job posting. Now, if the job posting just shows people in their 20s, and the job posting says, we are looking for digital natives or early career professionals, what does that say to somebody who's middle or late career, right? We kind of don't want you here. So what we've tried to do, and so after a series of kind of interacting with employers like that, we now just put together guidelines. I literally have a set of slides like, you know, avoid this, avoid this. Do include this. If you're looking for people of all ages, say that you are. Say that you appreciate experienced talent. Make sure that not only your website but your job posting show diverse ages and faces on it. So if I, you know, I'm not looking at it saying, okay, everybody here is on my 20s. And I had this, I was, when we started changing the narrative, I was looking for a co-working space. And there was one that looked really appealing until I got to the saying that said, for millennials, by millennials. And I called them and I was like, you know, you've got this really cool space. And it was in downtown Denver where I was there then living. And I was like, but why do you say that? You know, I'm running an anti-ageism initiative. I can't really move it into a co-working space that's saying that. And they were like, oh, we don't mean that. We don't mean that. And I also wanted to add, and by the way, the spaces are really expensive. And how many people do you think who are just starting out can afford something like that, right? But I think it's because ageism is, we're so surrounded, right, by cultural messages that older is bad, younger is good, and that kind of thing, that people don't even think about it. So I try to give people grace. I try not to go, oh, you're a bad person, you're being ageist, and more, you know, if we can gently educate people. And so most of the tools that we create, Bridget, are very concrete, practical. I like to say we try to call people in instead of calling people out. It's just, here's some things you might want to know. You know, you're kind of missing out when you push older women out. You're kind of missing out on a lot of experience and insight of talents. And that was my big takeaway when I spoke at Denver Startup Week. I kept looking at this amazing group of women in the audience and thinking, all of these women could be contributing greatly to companies. They're clearly entrepreneurial. They're at Denver Startup Week. They're starting businesses, but they're starting businesses because they feel like they got pushed out.
What you were saying is so important in that educating the companies about right. language and about policy is really important. But what would you say to those women in the audience that were going to apply for that job that right. would make them more marketable as someone who's in our demographic?
And Colleen, that's really tricky. And I get people object to my approach a lot. So I'm just giving that sort of caveat. Okay. So one of the things I say at Change, as someone who started changing the narrative, is we need to recognize where we are. So some of the advice I'm about to give, some people have balked at and said, why should we shave years off our resumes? That's being ageist and whatever. And I'm like, you know, we are where we are. I personally, Janine Vandenberg, and Changing the Narrative, the organization I'm affiliated with, are pushing on a policy front, on a public policy front. We're working to strengthen age discrimination laws, which are not as strong as other forms of discrimination laws. We are doing employer education. So we're trying to educate employers about the business case for older workers and intergenerational teams. And we also know that we're not there yet, right? So when we partner to do workshops on success strategies for people age 50 plus, here's the advice we give. Don't put all of your experience, you know, highlight your most recent experience. Don't put the over 25 years of experience. Highlight the most recent, highlight your results, highlight your strengths, highlight your accomplishments, show your ability to work across generations, across ages. Make sure that you are not putting your graduation dates, right? and that kind of thing. In Colorado, we worked successfully with a coalition of partners to get our Colorado legislature to pass a law this last legislative session to ban employers from asking age or graduation dates on job applications. And we did that because we know that employers and hiring managers actually use that to screen people out. Resume Builder did a survey last year, and I was so stunned by the results. They 38% of hiring managers across the U.S. admitted that they screen people out based on age and graduation dates. Now, these are just the ones who admitted it, right, in a survey. Think of those who didn't admit it. So we know that that's real. So don't, you know, like, let's not do that. Let's make sure on our LinkedIn profile, yes, you're showing your education, but you're not putting the dates affiliated and that kind of thing. So, and the controversial part, Colleen, has been people have come to me and say, how can you be an anti-ageism advocate and encourage people to do something? And I'm like, because we're not there yet. And I want women to have economic security, and I want women to have jobs for which not only are they capable, but they're probably a great candidate. And so you need to get in the door, right, to show people what you can do. So, but know that there's conflicting thought within the anti-ageism community about the advice that I give there.
What are some other policies that that changing the narrative is trying to initiate?
Yeah. So the policies that we think are most important, especially as regards to women employment, are one, and this has kind of really take place in my part, in my view, on a state by state, because it's not going to be handled on a federal level for a whole lot of reasons. There is a National Age Discrimination in Employment Act. But as a result of a series of court decisions, as a result of a Supreme Court decision, the burden of proof for proving age discrimination is much higher than it is for other forms of discrimination, right? So that's kind of problem number one. There's been legislation that's stuck in Congress to change that. I don't see it going anywhere. So that's the kind of thing that we need to do state by state. There are several courts of appeals which govern a number of states which have ruled that the Age Discrimination in Employment Act doesn't apply to hiring. So if you find out, for example, that yes, you have been discriminated against based on your age, even if you can prove it, if you can meet that higher burden of proof, it's not going to apply to hiring, right? So we need to strengthen our age discrimination laws so they're on parity with other forms of discrimination. We need to introduce, I'm hoping, legislation in every state. We already have legislation in, I think, New York, Connecticut. There's another state on the West Coast. And we're kind of working with a group of people to make sure that advocates and champions in every state kind of endorse the same kind of legislation that we did in Colorado to ban asking age and graduation dates. So that's like in terms of age discrimination laws. The other thing that we need to do, in my view, is all of us at any age need ongoing reskilling and upskilling, right? We can't, and if you've been pushed out of the workforce, well, you're not going to be getting that kind of retraining from your employer, right? There are workforce development centers that are federally funded, so it's our tax dollars that are in every state, in every community in the nation. Very often, though, the programs aren't necessarily geared towards people age 50 and over. And it's an effort to get, even if they have some programs geared to age, people age 50 and over, they're not necessarily the kind of reskilling and upskilling that we might need, despite the fact Changing the Narrative did our own research during the pandemic. AARP has done research on this, that actually we do want to learn new things. So there's this big myth, right? As we get older, we don't want to learn new things. Absolutely false, right? We all do. So we need to be championing that those dollars be used in part to retrain, to upskill, to offer new skills training to, you know, people who want to advance, whether it's to do something new or just, you know, get more advanced in your field. So I think that's another area. And then I think, so, and that's mostly in terms of public policy. The other, and this is a little bit more complicated, and I actually just came off a webinar on this. One of the problems is we don't have really good data. And so, and asking people to champion laws about data, people are like, oh my God, that is so boring. But here's why this is important. There was this whole mythology, right, during the post-pandemic storyline in the media that said things like, well, there was a great retirement, right? That somehow older people and people age 60 and over had all retired and they didn't want to work. Well, the reality is, finally, there was a group called the Schwartz Economic Policy Center that did some research and they crunched a bunch of data and they found out actually it was that older people were pushed out and they kept trying to find a job again and they couldn't. So they finally resigned themselves to not being able to work. Now that's not retiring, right? That's being pushed out of the workforce. There was this whole narrative, right, about women quitting. Well, women didn't quit. I mean, we all saw, right, women on Zoom squares throughout the pandemic. And every time I was so grateful that my two daughters were both, you know, out in the workforce, but also at the time did not yet have children. Because as I watched all of these women trying to manage, okay, here I am and I'm in my client meeting. And by the way, you know, I'm managing homeschooling over here. And, you know, so women didn't quit. Women were pushed out. But we don't have really good data on that, right? We don't have really good data. So it's hard because we don't have data to go ahead and champion to policymakers. You need to pay attention to women. I mean, so part of it, the policy that I've talked about is specifically about older people. As a longtime champion of women who felt she had to start her own firm because women and work kind of didn't work together, I look at my two daughters now and I'm like, that's still is the case, right? We haven't made that much progress. So I just think stronger policies that support women and recognize the many roles that we occupy are really the public policy that we need. And if we have those for younger women, they're going to benefit all of us as we get older as well.
My final question to you is for someone who is looking for employment and they maybe are over 50, are there resources that they can go to? Are there listings where maybe there's some companies that cater more to hiring experienced employees?
So there, great question, Colleen. Thank you for asking that. I think it's really important because we can spend a lot of our time right now, but if you need, like fighting, right, for all of these things, and that's what I spend my time doing. But if you were looking for a job right now, I would start by looking at the employers who've already said, you know what, we recognize the benefit of older workers and we are age friendly. So for example, AARP has a job pledge program and the employers who do that basically say that we are open to people age 50 and over and they have job boards. There is another program of which Changing the Narrative was a part that is run by the National Age Friendly Institute. And they do a certification program for certified age-friendly employers. So if those are employers who have been through a process that show that they have age-friendly policies, that they're open to people of all ages, that they have not had age discrimination lawsuits filed against them, et cetera. So they also, you know, have job boards.
Thank you so much, Jeannie, for being a guest on the show and for everything you are doing to change the narrative for women and men over a certain age. Thank you.
Hopefully for women of all ages. Thank you so much to both of you. So fun to be here with you both.
Well, we want to thank Jeannie very much for coming on the show, sharing her insight, her expertise, her information. And again, you can check out our show notes that should have all of the links, but you can go to Changing the Narrative, which will also provide you with resources that will hopefully help you or a family member to keep active and engaged in the corporate world if you so choose or if you have to, because a lot of people are living longer and that means they're working longer in order to provide for themselves and their family. Thank you so much, Jeannie. Guys, make sure you're following us on all forms of social media. Have you checked out our YouTube page? Because it's growing. We have so many videos from our episodes that you can check out and watch. So make sure you're following us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all those fun things. Have a great week, guys, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.